Dear colleagues, I'm Christoph Diener, a neurologist from the University of Essen, and I would like to summarize what has happened in the neurology field in the last 4 weeks. It was a very exciting time because we had many studies. Let me start with the more depressive part of what has been done, and this is about Alzheimer's disease. The New England Journal of Medicine published the large phase 3 solanezumab study. This is a humanized antibody against A-beta for mild dementia. This study recruited 2,130 patients with mild Alzheimer's disease identified by amyloid PET or positive test in the CSF. And these patients were treated with the antibody or placebo, and the study was totally negative for all endpoints. The second study, and these were basically three studies, and they were done with a 5-HT6 antagonist. This drug, Idalopyridine, showed some promise in combination with choline esterase inhibitors in a phase 2 study. So three trials had 2,525 patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, and the study could not show an impact of the new drug on the cognitive decline over 24 weeks. This study was supported by Lundbeck. The consequence of these negative trials is that one large player in the field, which is Pfizer, pulled out of Alzheimer's research, and I would almost predict that Lilly will do the same. So what's new in stroke? There was a spectacular paper in the British Medical Journal. The authors looked at the relationship between smoking and stroke, and they found 55 publications with 141 cohort studies. And what they identified was that if a male smokes one cigarette per day, the risk of stroke is increased by 25%. And if it's a woman, the stroke risk is increased by 31% compared with non-smokers. For comparison, if a man smokes 20 cigarettes per day, the relative risk increase is 64%, and for women, it's 216%. And this is very important because it clearly tells our patients it's not good enough to reduce smoking, you have to quit smoking. Now, at the American Stroke Congress in Los Angeles about 10 days ago, the DiFuse 3 study was presented and published at the same time in the New England Journal of Medicine. This study investigated thrombectomy against standard of care in a time window of 6 to 16 hours after onset of symptoms with CT or MRI perfusion imaging. The study was terminated when 182 patients were randomized because it was clearly positive. The odds ratio for the modified ranking scale in favor of thrombectomy was 2.77, and a good outcome defined by modified ranking of 0 to 2 was 45% versus 17%. There was no difference in mortality, and there was a high recanalization rate. So DiFuse 3 basically replicates what has been shown in the DAWN study, which had a time window between 6 and 24 hours. And I think it's now established beyond any doubt that thrombectomy, together with the proof that penumbra exists, really works up to 24 hours. There is also an important paper in stroke in the February issue, the 2018 guidelines for the early management of patients with acute ischemic stroke from the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association were published. Let me move to headache. The International Headache Society published a new classification of headache disorders in the first edition of Cephalalgia in 2018. Now, this is the final version. There was a preliminary beta version, which was published 3 years ago. And these criteria were tested in the field. And after field testing, now this is the final version, and it's really worthwhile to read it. Now, let me move to multiple sclerosis. ECTRIMS and the European Academy of Neurology published recent guidelines on the treatment of multiple sclerosis. This was published in the European Journal of Neurology. Now, what they recommend is that disease-modifying drugs should only be used in centers who have an adequate infrastructure to talk to patients, to provide the medication, whatever it is, and to take care of all of the safety measures. What they basically recommend in clinically isolated syndrome and positive MRI to start these patients on interferon or glatiramer acetate. Say we should offer early treatment in patients with relapsing remitting MS. The choice of the disease modifying drug depends on the patient, on the severity of the disease, on safety issues and on imaging. And that we should consider ocrelizumab in primary progressive MS, and we should consider beta interferon for secondary progressive MS. And then there was an interesting study from a patient and population registry in Sweden. And the authors published this study in JAMA Neurology, and they looked at rituximab for the treatment of relapsing remitting MS. Overall, they observed 494 patients with MS. 43% had injectable disease-modifying drugs, 4% received fumarate, 10% fingolimod, 24% natalizumab, and 24% rituximab. They found the highest retention over time for rituximab. So only 3% of patients dropped the treatment compared to 29 to 53% with the other treatments. And there was a trend for better efficacy for rituximab over the other treatments. I am totally aware this is off-label treatment, but I think in some patients it should be considered, in particular when the drug comes off patent and gets much cheaper. So, ladies and gentlemen, exciting times. We have, unfortunately, again, negative results from Alzheimer's trials, and I'm really worried that I'm not sure whether industry is really willing to stay in Alzheimer's disease. We have a positive trial for trabectomy in an extended time window, and we have new recommendations how to treat patients with MS from ECTRIMS and the European Academy of Neurology. I'm Christoph Diener, a neurologist from the University of Essen in Germany. Thank you for watching and listening.